Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
This is Kathy Smith, and I'm here with Blake Little today, and we are going to be talking about the teacher slash coach's viewpoint of the pandemic of 2020. So I'd like to introduce Blake Little. Go ahead, Blake. Tell us what your name is and where you live. And
yeah, my name is Blake Little. I live at 602 Southeast Douglas Street, Lee Summit, Missouri. I'm currently a high school teacher at Lee Summit High School, where I teach history to sophomores and seniors. I'm also the head boys basketball coach and the boys golf coach. And I'm married to a high school counselor named Kristen Little. We have two kids, Sawyer and Scarlett Little, who were both students, one at Pleasant Lee Middle School and the other at Lee Summit Elementary.
So when this pandemic first hit, tell us what your thoughts were and how you were able to start the beginnings of coping with everything. I mean, I know there were a ton of things that most of us lay people weren't aware of, so kind of give us an overview of that, if you would, please.
You know, it's one of those things, I think, you know, I felt like I don't think you ever quite see it coming like it was supposed to. You know, I don't think we saw it like as a year lockdown, kind of what we went through or however long it was. But I knew something was coming. You know, I think as a social studies teacher, you kind of keep your eyes on current events and what's going on around the world. And so I just have this distinct memory, you know, the week before we had spring break. That was, you know, which is when we got the email on the Friday that you're not coming in. There's no students on this Friday. And then we will kind of get back in touch with you in April about when we're coming back or if we're coming back. But I remember that week, there were a couple of things that happened. One, we were in the second week of golf. And so we had our parent meeting, which our parent meeting was, this might be the last time I see you. You know, we may not, you know, by the time Saturday gets here, we may not be going. We were supposed to have our basketball banquet that week. We postponed it. And then, you know, I just had this interesting, you know, night, you know, right as it really became clear that I think, you know, we were getting ready to get shut down, my son and I went and got haircuts because it was one of those things. I thought, I don't know when we're gonna get a haircut again. If we really get shut down, like I think this is coming. And so that Wednesday before we really kind of went into that full lockdown, we went to the grocery store and got haircuts at the Great Clips over there. And that was it. It was kind of one of those things. I just felt like it was coming. And I think that was maybe more so than most just because I was as a social studies teacher, I just feel like I was just constantly aware, you know, visiting, you know, a combination of social media, but also the Reddit platform. There's a site called Reddit, and it had coronavirus as one of the topics, and you're kind of reading the stories from Italy, and you're reading the stories about spreading through. I had a former student of mine in Italy at the time, and I was seeing her kind of posts as she's trying to get back home and thinking, this is really going to happen. This is going to be here. And so I think the biggest thing was sort of a realization that this was coming and, you know, trying to figure out what that meant. And I think that's kind of where I was. So we were trying to just cover all the bases and just having our family ready first and foremost.
So then you got yourself stocked up on groceries. Man. Haircuts for everybody.
Yeah, well, I say for Saul and I, we didn't get another one until like July, so it was one of those things. It was a smart move on our part. Yeah, so we got stocked up, and then it was just kind of, you know, wait and see. We'd gone to the last event in the field house before everything got shut down. It was a game between Ray South and Grandview. That was on a Tuesday night. So the following Tuesday, everything was shut down. So it was just one of those interesting things looking back at how normal everything was, even though in the back of my mind, I kept thinking that this was probably going to happen. But in those moments, you kind of kept doing normal things. You know, I think that was the thing, just trying to keep it normal as long as you could, not quite knowing what was coming, but knowing that something was.
So just in terms of, for my own information, stocking up, what does that mean? What kind of stuff did you get?
Honestly, it was largely medical. I loaded up on Tylenol. If you remember, like, early on, there was, like, some reports that it was, like, you know, Tylenol was better than ibuprofen. Like, they weren't sure how people were reacting, and that it seemed that, like, acetaminophen or whatever it was better. So it was, like, stuff like that. It was cough medicine. It was, you know, if we do get this respiratory, are we going to be stocked up on respiratory-type medicines to help deal with what we don't quite know what it is? So it was kind of, it was more stuff like that. And then I wouldn't say we did anything crazy as far as, like, we weren't hoarding toilet paper and stuff, but but, you know, I think we bought some soups and just some stuff. I think we probably bought 2 weeks worth of meat that, you know, than we typically would have, and to freeze it. And I think it was just like a lot of stuff like that. I went up to school, and I had a refrigerator in my classroom that I knew I wasn't going to be using for a while, so I brought it home so we'd have some extra storage on the deck, so we had more drinks and stuff like that. It wasn't even big. It was just kind of just to have a little bit extra. But no, we're not really the hoarding kind of go crazy people, but we just wanted to make sure that we had something so that if people panicked. And it was on a Wednesday, so I think if we would have gone 2 days later, it would have been an entirely different experience. But mm-hmm. on Wednesday, everything was like fully stocked. It wasn't nuts. Not like it would be later on. Mm-hmm. You know, we go down there 2 weeks later, and there's not a single paper product in the building, because apparently that's what everybody was afraid of, right?
So, yes.
Yeah. So it was hand sanitizer and paper products that were gone. So.
So what did your kids think about this?
You know, my son, I think, was pretty relaxed about it. You know, we were going through an interesting sort of family transition because we just moved. So we had moved to the house that we're in now in basically November of 19. And so my son was still on a transfer, basically at his old school. My daughter had just transferred to her new school, PL. And so, you know, I think for them, it was more that adjustment that was harder, and, you know, the not knowing. I mean, it was tough on my daughter because, you know, she had moved at semester, had just started to kind of make friends, and then we got shut down. In fact, you know, the Saturday before we got locked down was her birthday, and so we had a birthday party. So you think about, like, you know, if it had been a week later, she wouldn't have had a birthday, right? And, like, in fun, you know, we had sent out invitations for my 40th birthday was coming up on April 4th. And so we had this gathering plan that, of course, didn't happen. And so you're kind of thinking about just all those, like, little just life things that are along the way that just happen that, you know, you kind of just, you know, you lock in. I think they handled it well. I think there was the mystery of it. There was a little bit of fear. I think there was a little fear. I think my son more so just asking questions about what's this like. And I don't know. Like, you know, it's one of those things. People have died from what we don't know exactly. I think my daughter was more concerned about just the abrupt stop of everything. And then how do I keep doing school and things like that.
So in terms of your students, how did that work? I mean, you had to switch to virtual learning. How did you make that adjustment? And how did you?
You know, I think the hardest thing about that was there's a general unknowing, right? I think if you would have told me on whatever date that was, March 17th, that you're not going back to school this year, all right, we're going to go virtual instruction the rest of the way, go. I think that would have been easier, right? And I don't blame our district for, like, not telling us that, because how are they going to know, right? So I think the hardest thing, you know, from a teaching standpoint, was that it was constantly changing. And that's the way it was for everybody, right? It was everybody in this world was dealing with different sort of changing ideas and, you know, in the pandemic. So I think for us, that was the hard part. As a teacher, personally, it was hard because you didn't have that closure at the end of the year. You know, I've got seniors that were getting ready to take a test at the end of the year. And, you know, you kind of have those moments where, you know, the end of the senior year, we just didn't get to have that. We didn't have our basketball banquet, right? You know, we see our golf kids and, you know, they, you know, we're like, all right, guys, we play next Tuesday, or, you know, but then we'd never play, you know? So, you know, I think on the personal level, spent a lot of time. I mean, I called my basketball kids, you know, personally, you know, every so often just to check in with them. And the same thing with the golf kids. We were just checking in. How you guys doing? How's it holding up? Because you don't know what everybody else's existence is. As a teacher, I mean, I had a job. Right? My wife had her job. Didn't know what everybody else was like. We were healthy. I don't know how everybody else is doing. So I think there's a lot of that stuff that weighs on you, just hoping that your families and the kids that you care about are coping. And taking a very empathetic view to what they're going through, because school really takes a back seat to that. In a lot of ways, that's the way school is in general. It always kind of, I love history, but I understand that in a lot of ways that my history class is not the most important thing in their life and can't be. And so you're always trying to kind of find that balance of teaching, right? But also, you know, empathizing with what your students are going through. And this was just the same type of thing. I was fortunate in that, you know, I did all of my post-master's work. You know, as a teacher, you get, you know, pay raises for additional, basically, continuing education classes. So every 15 hours, you get a bump up to 45 hours post-master's. And so for the last 3 years, I basically worked 15 hours a year on online instruction and building these things.
Okay.
So I felt really prepared for what we're doing. The platform that our school district uses is called Schoology, and I built all kinds of classes and just assignments that were ready to be distributed that way. Despite the fact, as a teacher, I don't typically like to use it. In fact, I was getting ready. I was the teacher of the year for the district. And so I'd been asked to speak at a few conferences, and one of the ones was going to be at UCM. My topic was basically finding balance in a modern classroom between technology and kind of old school practices. And then that was all out the window. That got canceled and we were all online. So I think that, you know, trying to just navigate exactly what that's going to look like was a bit challenging, because you don't overwhelm your kids. It was pretty clear within the first 2 weeks that there's no such thing as a traditional school schedule when you're in a pandemic, right? The idea of meeting every hour, that was gone with our high school kids. And so we had this very interesting dynamic to the day where, as a teacher, I'd get up every morning, right? I would sit, actually, you're sitting right now, we're in our kitchen, but this was my office for that. And, you know, I would sit here and I would get up and I would push out my content for the day, because it had to be out by 9 a.m. So whatever recorded materials I'd made, whatever assignment that I'd created, whatever it was there, and I'd answer any emails over there in the morning, but I wouldn't hear from a student until like 5 o'clock at night. So it was almost like the school day, you know, what was going on during the day was me hanging out, wondering, you know, trying to be useful. And then about 5 o'clock at night, all of a sudden the emails and then the assignments would start getting turned in. And so it was, you know, it became almost like I was teaching night school, because you're working on the student's schedule, not your own.
Sure.
But I think, you know, I think once it became clear that, you know, the district made the decision that basically, you know, grades don't matter. They could keep their grade at the moment. They could either improve their grade from the time the pandemic started and we got shut down, or they could just keep it. And once that became the thing, then there was like almost no contact. You know, even, you know, the highest flyers of students are like, well, I've got an A, I don't need to, these next 6 weeks I'm going to hang out. And so as a teacher, you're kind of like, well, I'm really making materials for like four kids, you know, that were still tuning in and trying to raise their grade. And I was also teaching a new class that I'd never taught before on like a women's studies class. And it was basically just two students who kept showing up. So I was like producing a class for two kids that I'd never taught before. It was just like such a weird dynamic, because you're trying to like give the kids what they want and have this opportunity to continue learning, because you want to value that. But at the same time, that's a lot of work for two kids,
you know, like sure,
creating new materials and reading books and pushing all the stuff and doing these lectures. And it was just an interesting dynamic.
So how do you think overall that your students did? I mean, did they, at the end, I know you had to have finals and things like that.
So well, we didn't have
you
finals.
You didn't have finals.
No, I mean, that was, like it was just basically, it was, you know, once that came out, it was, I'm trying to think of when we got the information. It had been around Easter. But basically, you know, I mean, kids just stopped showing up. I mean, I think to answer that question, I don't know. Like, I think, you know, we're still in it, right? Like, we haven't, you know, the ramifications are still in place. We're still dealing with it. Because you had kids all year that were in and out, you know, based upon quarantines, and they had the option to stay at home and do virtual or online learning all year, or come back or leave, or come back or leave. So I think the answer to that question is we don't know. And I think that was one of the hardest things as a teacher, because, you know, as a teacher, there's a rhythm. And I think that's the thing I love about teaching, is there's a rhythm to a year. You start at this point, you have this holiday comes up, you have this, these tests are here. There's a certain kind of flow to it. And that's the beauty of teaching in a lot of ways, is that, you know, my year, and I'm sure it's like this in a lot of careers, but for teaching, it's just there's a rhythm to it. Just, you know, that's how it works. And so that was totally off. And I think the kids need it, and I think the teachers need it. And hopefully when we go back to school in August this year in 2021, we'll be back to that. But it's been a year and change of I would say, upheaval.
So in terms of the seniors, I always worried about them, how they were able to,
you
know, get their scholarships and all that kind of stuff. So what happened with some of those kids?
Well, I think, you know, those, well, you had, I think some parents having to make a tough decision. You know, a couple of my players that you know, we're not going to go play, you know, college athletics, but they sat out a year. You know, they basically took a year because they didn't want to pay for college and go sit in a dorm room. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you had, I think you had some of that, that decision as far as what are we going to do now? From an athletic standpoint, it's created a backlog. It's actually made it really difficult for our kids because the NCAA granted all the kids that were in college an extra year of eligibility. Well, then you have these kids that are coming to school in 2020 who are going to play a sport. They've got a scholarship. You've got the kids that are still there. They're going to stay an extra year. It's bottlenecked. So it's really having a negative impact on our 2021 kids. Kids who just graduated now, there are fewer scholarships and fewer available opportunities for them because the pandemic basically created an extra year. So you have this whole group of kids who would have graduated and gone on who are now back in college for another year. And so I think those are things we're still dealing with. And it may not be until this next class, and I hope it's for this next class, that this 2022 group actually kind of gets the world sort of rights itself and it gets balanced. But it's, you know, as a high school coach trying to get kids recruited for various sports, we're behind. And it's not the college's fault. They're looking around like, we thought we had six seniors, now we have six kids back. So we're recruiting for this, and now we don't have those scholarships and all this. So there's a little bit of that. What was difficult, I think, you know, we were very lucky that we did get have a graduation, right? And I thought last summer that was not going to happen. And, you know, going into the last summer, I mean, it was such an interesting dynamic because you had, we're not having graduation, we are having graduation. We're not having graduation, we're going to have graduation, right? It's going to be at the schools, then it's not going to be the schools because the county put in different restrictions. You couldn't do it in Jackson County. And so they end up going to Wyandotte County and doing it at Sporting Kansas City Stadium, which ended up being a wonderful, I think, event. And it was a great celebration to be able to do that. But, you know, I think if anything, hopefully we've learned to be more flexible, right? Because it just, there's this constant change, and you know, and I think that was the thing going into summer was, you know, as a coach, you're not going to be able to do anything. Okay, well, now you're going to be able to do some things, but you can't do it with a basketball. But if you're inside, you have to have a mask on. But if you have a mask on, they have to be within six. They have to be 6 feet apart. Here's your spray bottle. Here's your hand sanitizer, right? Here's your thermometer to check every kid as they come in. You can't actually play basketball, right? And like, they can't even pass the basketball. They have their individual basketball. Well, they have to have their own individual towel. So you're going through all of these things, it's ever changing because new information was coming from the CDC. And of course, our districts and trying to navigate what that is. And of course, the county has different things. So it's just this sort of constant, I would say, change. But then I think it really got you to just be grateful to be in the gym, to be around the kids. Because that's what you miss.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, I think, the best part about kind of going into summer.
And then the kids missed each other, too.
Here's the deal. No, they didn't.
Oh.
Because they were hanging out.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing that was so, you know, about this. It's like we're all like here and here. And I think that's also the lesson of the pandemic for all of this is, you know, as a school, you're trying to protect your students. But the moment they leave, right, and we always talk about this, in my classroom, I can control things. On my court, I can control things, right, in the gym. But the moment they leave, I've got no control over. And the same thing happened, right? So everybody's locked down, but they're not locked down. Kids are hanging out. Who do you think our essential workers were at the stores? They're kids.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are the ones working the fast food. The kids are the ones working all those jobs that were essential, right? I had a bunch of kids that were working at Home Depot, right, that were getting essential worker bonuses because they're out working and they're hanging out with their friends. So, like, for them, right, they just didn't have school, but they had a lot of the other social outlets going on. And I think that's always, you know, that was also to me a really important lesson, I think, in all of this is, you know, you think about all the things that stress you out as a teacher, as a coach that you can't control. We'll throw a pandemic in, it's amplified.
Because
mm-hmm. you can't control what people do when they leave the school, right? And so, no, they didn't miss each other. They were hanging out the whole time, right? It was the adults that weren't around each other. It was the kids were always together.
So how did, I mean, monitoring their, you know, whether they had, or testing positive and all that kind of stuff, so how were they doing that?
Well, I mean, I think you had, you know, early on, obviously, the testing was very difficult because you could never know who tested and who didn't, and it was, you know, 5, 6, 7 days sometimes before. So I think, you know, your answer to that is you really don't. I mean, I think you're seeing that with the CDC data now, which is, you know, we assume this many people have had COVID. There's probably another 30% who did that we can never possibly know. And I think we had that sort of thing within our building. But in June, we started having kids that were testing positive. And that was sort of became on our radar because we have all the HIPAA, things we have to keep in track. But from an athletic standpoint, once it became clear we could be in the gym, then there became a return to play policy for anybody who had had it. Because there was supposed to be a 10-day sort of, you had to have a heart screen, then there's a 10-day sort of return to play process they had to go through. So we became aware of the kids who had, tested positive because they had a return to play process. But we could never say why they were, that's the funniest thing. Why are they here, but they're not able to do anything? They're just getting ready to play. You couldn't say what they had.
And yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, so they had COVID. You're like, no, we can't say that. But it's one of those things you're trying to protect privacy, but everybody's looking around and they all know, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that. But it was one of those things that, that's when you start seeing the positive tests was, I would say, into June. We had a former player of ours who, I believe, got it from another former player of ours who had gone to play Division I football, who they believe got it there. Then, because you had all these people from all over the country coming for football, right? And so he gets it. He's home for the weekend to see a friend. That friend then gets it. Then it starts getting passed around. And so, it was interesting to see just how that played out. And then how aware everybody sort of becomes. And then trying to, track it. That was the thing. I'm glad in my part of it, I was not involved in any of the tracking of it. If we had a positive case or I had to report it to either the assistant principal or to our athletic director, if we had somebody who had had any sort of symptoms and they had to be cleared before they could return or we had a quarantine. So
then in terms of getting games scheduled, I bet that was a nightmare, wasn't it?
Not for me. Again, as a coach, the schedule's made. And so, that's the thing about it. What was really hard when we finally got to the season, and the start of our season was tough. Basketball really starts that 1st of November, and our big outbreak that we really had in League Summit was that time, right? So you'd had our school year starts, and we're all virtual. Okay, so we're virtual. We're trying to do virtual school. You sort of the lingering effects of the kids who didn't have to do anything at the end of the year last year because, there was no incentive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're back to school again. We're all online and, we're doing virtual meetings and nobody's showing up because they're like, I don't have to be here. Attendance doesn't matter, right? I just have to turn in the work that's assigned. So there's this interesting dynamics where we start a couple weeks late and we're all virtual. And then we have the hybrid model, which comes in, which means you have, half your kids Monday, Tuesday, no school Wednesday, then the other half of your kids Thursday, Friday. As a teacher, it was awful because you're working twice as hard to teach half as much, right? So we're like, you're doing everything six times, but you're only covering half the material and you're really trying to get to know kids, but the kids are in masks. And for the kids, it's the worst possible experience you could have in school. They were excited to be back, but you couldn't do any of the things in school that they like. They couldn't talk in the hallways. They couldn't talk at lunch. They were all spread out. Only half their friends are in class, right? And so they're really just there to get material, right, and test. Because they can't do the other school stuff. Well, it's really at the time you get to the end of those, I guess we had had maybe 6 weeks of that, that you start to see cases pop up in our schools. A couple teams got shut down, like North football got shut down, so they didn't get to compete in the postseason. But you had other kind of programs around that you sort of had those positive cases, but then you have Halloween. And so Halloween happens, and I don't know that any parent has ever told their kid no on Halloween. Does that sound? I mean, I'm trying to think of yeah. nobody's ever said no to a kid on Halloween.
That's right.
Let's go do this. And so Halloween kind of became, I think, that next round where you'd had just enough kids, in the buildings, just enough exposure, right? Then you have Halloween, which then amplifies it. And so when we get to the first weeks of November, you know, you've kind of got a full-on outbreak in Lee's Summit. At least the school was over 270 people are quarantined at one point. You see those numbers, and you can the historical record on it. The district did a good job of keeping that. But you're like, each week there's 250 kids that are at least quarantined, if not more, who have it. And that's the first week of basketball, right? So we have Halloween, and then we have our first week of basketball. And then our football team had played down in Ray Peck, which was you know Cass County had. Has almost no rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we go into our first week, and all of a sudden, assistant coach has COVID, another assistant coach has COVID, I have COVID, five or six of our players have COVID, right? And we're doing all this stuff, so we're managing it, right? So we've got everybody gets a temperature check when they come in. We have chairs. Every kid comes in, they have their own chair, their own bag, their own towel, their own water bottle. We never use a locker room. And we film it, so we have a film the entire time to show any time a kid is within, you know, 6 feet of each other. So if they are, then we have to get in quarantine. All right. So we go through, I would say, basically a month of that. At that point in time, schools get shut down again. We're only virtual. My wife's been quarantined. Family's been quarantined. My poor son gets quarantined like three times during this whole process. So he's in, he's out. He's been in school the whole time because the early elementary kids went the whole time. And then, you know, then it's time to play games. And it was one of the most bizarre things. And I think as a coach, what was really hard was we were trying to follow every single protocol we could follow, right? And so I felt like early, more than anything, I was coaching the protocols more than I was coaching my team, right? 6 feet apart, right? Make sure you guys don't, like, no high fives. Let's stay apart. Again, we're filming everything so you can see every interaction. We're wearing masks the whole time. We played our first two games in masks, right? And then we play, I'm trying to think. I think it was our fourth game before we actually had our whole team there because of various quarantines and all that stuff. And you only had parents in stands. And so you have this very just interesting start to the year where you think about, again, all the things that kids like about school, well, they couldn't do. All the things they like about high school sports, they couldn't do. They didn't have the locker room time where they could be friends. They didn't have that time to go, like, do the team things. You know, they don't get to play in front of their friends. They're only playing in front of their parents. And their parents are awesome, but they're not great fans because it's, you know, it's a group of, you know, your 30 parents and the other team's 30 parents. It's just a different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was the hardest thing. As a coach, I don't think I quite got that until we got to about January and then we got shut down. Not because of anything we did, because of something another school did. And so we were shut down. And I think that's when you finally realize, well, as a coach, I can't coach the pandemic. I just got to coach my team because it doesn't matter. Like, we've done everything right and we're still shut down, right? Because another team doesn't follow the same, another county doesn't follow the same stuff that we do. And so that was what was, I think, very frustrating for our kids.
Well, we went to Lee Summit playing Lee Summit West.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some really nice parents. Mm-hmm. I think Mike McDonald's parents, I think that's his name, was a West player. And we sat in front of them. And they said that the kids all really missed each other very much. You know, mm-hmm. that first game that they played, mm-hmm. they couldn't get them off the floor practically. I mean, they were mm-hmm. just right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that really, I thought about that. I thought, man, that really, kids are sociable and, you know, they have a passion for their sport and everything and they want to be with their teammates and everything. That must have been very difficult for that.
Yeah. And the thing is, it was difficult in the sense that we couldn't, you know, the things that we would do typically as a team, like last year was the year we would have gone to St. Louis as a team. We would have this trip to St. Louis, we'd gone to play a tournament. Well, we couldn't. That's usually a 3-day, really fun bonding experience team. Instead, mm-hmm. we can't do it. And then you get the, no, they were still hanging out, right? Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, they mm-hmm. just weren't, it just wasn't done as an entire team. It was, you just had more cliques and groups as mm-hmm. opposed to the whole, you know, there wasn't the team dinners. We weren't allowed to do that. And so, if they were being done, they were being done in secret, right? And so what usually happened was you'd have four or five kids who hung out together as opposed to the whole 12 or the whole 15 or the whole program. And that's just, that's tough.
So you think that that kind of, would they break off as cliques in, and then by the time they get together, they're still kind of in that clique, or was it easy to get back to being a comrade, you know, with your other team?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing about coaching, though, is to get your kids to all become a team. They don't all have to be friends, like, that's the thing, but to get them to, like, spend time together, because, you know, people naturally gravitate towards a few people. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to do a true team sport, you know, in basketball, where there's so much just cooperation and collaborative process and value within all the different roles on a team, it's really important to be able to get kids together and to buy into that and to spend time together off the court just as it is on. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really difficult. You mentioned West. I thought West had a good year this year, but like their core group of kids, they've grown up playing together since they were little. And they were close, and like they're, you know, I think all five starters were like best friends from the time they were children, okay. Right? And so like that's a different dynamic. They're mm-hmm. all seniors. We have a group of pretty close knit kids, but not all of them together, right? And you still have different groups, and that's a harder thing to kind of make work. And as the year went on, we finally kind of got there, but it just takes time.
Mm-hmm. So then, in terms of doing the scheduling, mm-hmm. I mean, I just saw you with a pencil over your ear and Tracy with a pencil behind her ear making phone calls and Xing people out, putting people in, you know.
We were pretty lucky in that, you know, we really only, I think we had one game early that was rescheduled because of COVID. We had another game because of an ice storm that we never made up because the ice storm hit, and then we got quarantined. When we got quarantined, that was going to be basically ended up being five games that were affected by it, of which we made up two. So we ended up losing, I think, on the year, maybe it was five games total that we just didn't play. And our district was probably the district that was hurt the most by that, because we had the strictest restrictions. I mean, my freshman team only played, I think, 12 games because they kept getting quarantined. And I don't fault our district for that. It's not a knock on the district. They just, mm-hmm. they followed it to the letter of the law, whereas mm-hmm. other people looked the other way. And so, I mean, we have programs in our district that got quarantined each month, you know, and we were very fortunate that we had the issue at the beginning of the year where we had a number of kids who had tested positive, but we kind of got through that, got through Christmas. And then we had a situation where we were, you know, on the court at North Kansas City, a kid had tested positive for them, and so any one of my kids who was on the court when he was on the court was out. Some schools used the 15-minute mark. Were they on the court 15 minutes? Well, they weren't, so they were able to continue to play. We used, and I had to laugh about it, and the only way you can kind of get through something like this is if you do laugh about some of the things.
Sure.
We'd had somebody tell us that one of the decision makers in the district had told us that, well, if they're on the floor, you know, a rebound's like a hug. And so, like, I was like, all right, well, that's not how everybody else is doing it, you know. And so we were kind of, we always kind of had the joke that, like, oh, this kid had, you know, 7 points, 3 assists, and 4 hugs. And, like, yeah, it was, you know, I think it's all you can do is laugh about it. So our kids would laugh about it, too, because you have to laugh about it, you know, or else, you know, you're going to go crazy because you just can't control it. Right? Uh-huh. Like that, you know. But, you know, we wear masks to and from on the bus. We wear masks during warm-ups. Team we go play, there's not a mask in sight. They've got different, you know, different rules as far as who can be in there. You know, they get shut down for 10 days. We get shut down for 14. You're like, you know, like, so just, it was just different. And so that's the thing is once I got to the point where I just, as a coach, I was like, well, I can't control it. So I go with it. Whatever happens, happens. But we're doing everything we can. And let's kind of get back to that. But, you know, it was just a different kind of, you just never quite knew.
Mm-hmm.
So
now for this year, for the schedule for this mm-hmm. year, you're getting excited. I mean, I'm sure you are mm-hmm. about, you know, setting up games with these other teams and things like that. Yeah. That, and the other coaches getting excited about coming over.
I think, you know, this summer, you know, we have, our summer this year was, I mean, I would say almost normal. In a typical summer, I always look at June as almost like a second season for us. We play a very condensed, just summer league sort of practice games in the summer. We do a summer league at least in the North, every Thursday for 4 weeks. And then we go play in a couple of tournaments, one at West and one at Shawnee Mission East. And, you know, it felt like normal, right? And I think that's what I think we're excited about. It's not so much the schedule. The schedule for us is made every 2 years. So the schedule we had last year just flips this year. We play all the same dates, all the same teams, just different locations. So if they were home this year, they're away next year, right? So, but I think it's just that return to having people, right? Like just, you know, we got to experience that a little bit down the stretch at districts, because all of a sudden we went from being able to have like 50 people to 100. And then we got to have almost 250 at a sectional game, and then the same thing in quarterfinals, and at 250 felt like 1,000, right? Mm-hmm. So just getting to have some of that was really nice. But I think, yeah, I think when we get there next year, provided we don't have some sort of crazy variant and everything goes nuts, but yeah, I think it'll just be nice to have some level of normalcy. And I say that as we're in the middle of a major reconstruction process in which normal is going to be different, right? So I think it's going to be really, I think that first Friday night in football this year, when the stadium's finished and you get to have your whole loud crowd and your, I think that's going to be a really nice thing to experience, having gone through what we've done. Because there's those different levels of normal, right? I was laughing, you know, when we got to May of this year. We'd been through this whole year of pandemic, everybody in masks, all this stuff. But when we got to May felt like the end of every other school year. Kids were still in masks, we're still going through these weird protocols, but the kids were kids again in May. And then the mask came off, and it just felt like we were back. So I think that's been the thing that's been really enjoyable, is that we're not there. And obviously, we still have people getting sick, and it's not gone away entirely, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a sense that things are feeling back. It felt like high school this summer, right? And there's some things that are missing. I think, you know, having not had last summer, you know, I think our younger kids haven't quite learned what the summer expectations are, and they may not. Like, you know, our seniors know what to expect. They were here as sophomores. They went through this whole thing, and we don't have it. Like, our current sophomores are looking around like, well, we weren't here last year. Like, we're doing stuff. Like, yeah, we lift 3 days a week, and then we have open gyms and stuff, and they're I think genuinely surprised by that, just because they missed out on that. Mm-hmm. And I think there'll be some interesting sort of, you know, your question about like what kind of impact it's going to have over time. I still think we're trying to see that, because I think, you know, there's a lot of the stuff that the summer stuff is different, and the expectations and who's there and all that stuff. It just is a different vibe.
So I've always wondered this, and pardon me if it sounds really stupid. So, I know the gym is fantastic. It's one of the best gyms in the whole area.
Right.
So, do other teams book that gym to play in, or it's just strictly for Lee Summit High School?
Well, yes and no. It's our gym, but you will have occasionally, like St. Michael's, when they play a big game against like Summit Christian, which is a rival game to Lee Summit schools, they'll rent it out. For years, Raytown and Ray South used to be played at Lee Summit High School. Because they don't have a gym big enough to handle the crowd. So it happens some. Those are the two instances that, you know, come to mind. But no, it's you know, we're there. It's our location. And, you know, the nice thing that has happened is that you have, over the last 15 to 20 years, actually had a number of nice gyms built. You know, the beauty of Lee Summit High School Fieldhouse is that it was ahead of its time. You know, it was built in, you know, 64 and opened in 65. And it was kind of that community, you know, that was the, you know, the kind of community center sort of a way for the school where they could have large events for the community.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got, you know, a bunch of new schools that have built new gyms and stuff like that. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because you had like Lee Summit High School, Grandview had a great gym, Hickman Mills, which, you know, barely exists anymore as far as it doesn't exist as a high school, had an amazing gym. So you start thinking about those kind of old school classic gyms. Those were the three.
Mm-hmm.
And Grandview and Lee Summit are still standing, but the newer gyms are a little bit better. But like St. Michael's can't build a 3,000 seat, you know, gym for their population, and they don't need it most nights. But when they play Summit Christian, who also is a small gym, it makes sense to play it there.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, so what are two of the arch rivals for Lee Summit High School in terms of basketball? Who are they?
Yeah, it's, you know, the answer growing up was always Blue Springs. You know, that was always the rival. You know, I think, you know, since I've been here, we've played a lot of great games against Blue Springs South. That's kind of been, you know, at least my first group of really good teams came through, and Blue Springs South was always the team we had to get by. So we played some great games against them. You know, right now, I don't know that we have one. We're in a different conference this year than we have been. So we're playing with teams that aren't typically, you know, our historical rivals. You know, the best teams in our conference besides us are going to be Staley and Park Hill South. But, you know, those kind of traditional rivals. And what was so fun, I think, last year partly is that when we got to sectionals, we played against Blue Springs. It was a very old school, you know, Blue Springs versus Lee Summit, a sectional game, and then the winner played Liberty, right? Those were old school, you know, going back mm-hmm. to the original Suburban Conference schools. Because we've got so many more directional schools now, or, you know, you've got your West, your North, you've got your Park Hill South, you've got your Staley's, you've got all these new schools, Liberty North, that have come around. But it's kind of fun to have a year where you had those sort of traditional rivals that were playing. Liberty and Lee Summit have played a lot of games over the years. And then the same with Blue Spring. So I think the answer right now is, I don't know. It's not really, you know, it has. I think people, the kids want it to be North and West, right? Because they're in town.
But, yeah.
You know, Lee Summit kids and other Lee Summit kids. Like, I don't know. That's kind of, I always think that's like, you know, if you're trying to just beat the teams in your own, you know, your own neighborhood, then you're really not, I think, trying to be big enough, is right? Mm-hmm. And that was, when I was an assistant at Lee Summit West, that was always kind of the mindset. It didn't really matter what North or Lee Summit did. We were always trying to do something beyond that. And that's sort of the way we are, right? We're trying mm-hmm. to go beyond. For us to reach the level we want to go, it's you know, we want to be the best in Lee Summit, but we're trying to knock off those other teams that are you know, on the perch.
So being in this new division, what is it? I mean, does it have a name? Or?
Well, we're the Suburban Red Conference. So okay. You've got four Suburban conferences: Suburban Gold, which is the big conference, which is where Lee Summit West, Lee Summit North are, along with the two Liberties, Park Hill High School, both Blue Springs, Ray Peck. I think that's it. But it's eight teams. And we've traditionally been in that conference outside of a couple of years. We are not in that conference now because we are a little bit smaller. So we are with Park Hill South, Staley, North Kansas City. Trying to go through my list of teams in that. St. Joe Central. And there's one more. I'm trying to picture the wall. We've only been in for 1 year. but anyway, there's those are the kind of the teams. Now, we should go up. They redo this every 2 years. We should go up next time because we are bigger than Lee Summit North now based on our current enrollment. And so that's the sort of, as the enrollment sort of pieces roll through, but that's how they've always done it. The largest six or largest eight are in the biggest, and they shuffle them down.
Okay. And I've heard of Staley, and I watched their stats and all that kind of stuff in the game of the week. They're pretty good.
Yeah, Staley's very good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a, I didn't even know there was a school called Staley.
Man, it's only been around about 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And is it up there by Park Hill somewhere or way
it's
up north?
In the North Kansas City district.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's up there. I think it's the most northern North Kansas City school. It's north of Oak Park.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's when they were built, they took predominantly from Oak Park.
Okay.
That was kind of their pull.
Okay.
So
that's a long trip on a bus.
Yeah, and every one of ours is north of the river. So we don't have anything. That's, you know, the unfortunate thing about the way our conference is done now is that you now have a lot of big schools to the point where you could probably do it geographically. You could have a large, you know, north, large south, you know, sort of conference, but it's still done by just sheer enrollment. So yeah, we go to St. Joe, we go to Staley, we go to Park Hill South, we go to North Kansas City. You know, all those are north of the river. So,
typically when kids leave for one of those games that far away, what time do they leave?
Oh, no, I mean, it's not for that. Like for, you know, high school basketball, the only one we really kind of leave early-ish on is St. Joe.
Okay.
But this year, that was one of the other interesting things is we took two buses all year. So ordinarily, like, we would leave much earlier than we did because we would leave with the JV. But we practiced all year without our JV. Our varsity group practiced together at one time. Our JV and sophomore team practiced together, which kept us from getting quarantined a couple times because we had sophomore and JV kids that had COVID or were quarantined and they got shut down or the team they played did. So we didn't ride the bus with them. So we had, and that was a... that was one of the things that I think was the right thing to do for us, but created a lot more work and a lot more time for all of our coaches, because we were there twice as long a lot of times. You know, so the sophomore team and JV team would practice till 4:30, and then our varsity team would start practice almost 5 by the time they cleared out the gym. So we, and you know, I was there for all of it. So you end up having a lot of that stuff in order to sort of make the COVID protocols work. And then part of that was the bus. So we never had to leave as early this year. Like, if ordinarily we leave about for a 5:30 game at St. Joe, we have to leave by 3:30. It's about an hour and a half up there.
And so what's the environment like on the buses?
Well, this year, it's changed quite a bit. It's pretty quiet, honestly, just because every kid's got their own personal listening device. And so they're really, I mean, it's a little bit, I would say, noisier on the way up, but not much. And then on the way home, it's almost always quiet because it's late and they're tired and they're listening to music or watching a video or whatever it is. So it's really a quiet. It's changed a lot.
Yeah, I'd say.
You know, 15 years ago, it was always, you were always kind of like trying to make sure kids were focused and, you know, not rowdy on the way up. And now you're making sure they're awake. So it's a little bit different, dynamic.
And then what do they do about meals?
Sometimes we feed them, but a lot of times they feed themselves. They bring their food and they'll bring a snack. The varsity guys, when they play late, do. So things like that. That was one of the challenging things this year. So it was difficult to do some of the food things that we would typically do just because, you know, and places wouldn't let us come in. So a lot of times on the way back from St. Joe, we would stop and like buy everybody food, but we couldn't do that because the places wouldn't let anybody come in to buy the food.
Mm-hmm.
So made it a little bit of a challenge. So we did a lot more, you know, bagged lunches and stuff.
I was just thinking, and back in my day, you know, you had the bus with the pep club and the cheerleaders,
yeah,
and they had the team, and we'd all be screaming our lungs out, you know, and having a big old time. I don't remember ever eating, period. I don't know what we did, but anyway, I was just kind of thinking that. And so then November starts. I mean, they're already kind of been playing some games and things like that.
Yeah.
But November starts. Is that when the you start official practice?
Yeah, it's when
like
tryouts start. Yeah.
Tryouts.
So we have to go through a week tryout process, and then we have ends up being about 3 weeks of practice before we play a game. We don't typically play before December 1st, largely because there's an overlap between fall and winter sports. If you've got football kids, they usually miss the first week of the season because they're still playing. Same with soccer. We usually have a couple soccer kids. So we don't like to schedule things before Thanksgiving. We try to get the week after. So,
okay. Yeah. And so how many returning starters do you have?
No, I got all 5 returning starters back this year, you know, as it stands. We have a big senior class coming through. This one's been, it's, you know, we've been watching this group come through since they were, I don't know, 5th grade. I think the first time, maybe 4th grade, the first time I saw them at our camps. It's a good group of kids. You know, got to keep working, got to keep getting better, got to keep, you know, maturing, got to stay healthy, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Should be a good group. It's going to be a strong area, you know, strong year around. All the teams that were good last year should be good again this year. Everybody brings everybody back. It was an interesting year. That was a very junior-driven year across the area.
So when on these, I envision you watch, you know, these camps and stuff, and watching the kids and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, do you make notes on the kids, or just just remember?
Well,
I mean, I can't see those big notebooks or something like that.
No, there's not. And you know, the camp thing, you know, really. The camps, you know, we really try to run a great camp. That's our primary goal for camps, is to run a great camp, try to have the best camp, right? Like, let's have the best camp, have the one the kids enjoy. And the kids come from all over, so not just our attendance area. So mm-hmm. you've got, you know, all 3 Lee Summits represented, but then you also have, some Blue Springs kids there and some Green Valley kids. Just, you know, you've got kids who get on the summer camp circuit because, like, their parents are like, I'll take you there. It's cheap babysitting, right? It's
mm-hmm.
about, you know, it's about, you know, $15 a day to be there for, you know, lots of fun energy. There's kids that I think as they're coming through. A lot of times I try not to find out where they're from because I don't want to be sad that they're not coming back. A little bit of that. And I think, you know, one of the hard things about our summer things is we're still not, we don't necessarily hit all the, like, the socioeconomic issues. And so we have a large portion of our kids in our attendance area who will never come to a summer camp because they can't. And it's not necessarily because of money, because we always have a bunch of kids that come for free for various reasons. But a lot of times it's like they've got to watch their siblings and things like that. And so it's a difficult, you know, summer camps are really important for us because they help, you know, they bankroll most of what we do during the year, mm-hmm. right? Our budget's not very big, but with that, by the time we have our camps, there's not much that we need to really fundraise during the year because those camps do a lot of it. And our high school kids work them, so it's the best type of, I think, fundraiser because the kids are really involved. They're not having to give money themselves. Mm-hmm. They're there giving back their time and being a good role model to the little kids. But it's not a perfect system. And that's the hard thing, I think, is trying to figure out a way to get every kid who wants to come to a basketball camp to your basketball camp and making it work. You got to get kids dropped off. And this year was tough just because we didn't have our gym. We were at Pleasant Lea Middle School, so it's another location. And so it's never easy. And then North's running their camp and West is running their camp, so we stagger them so we can all do it. But, you know, my son went to two camps. We had a number of kids at our camp that went to all three. And just go from one to one to one. So
how do you fundraise to help those kids that maybe have reduced financial circumstances?
Well, they just don't charge them. They get to come for free. We haven't, you know, it's like my thing has always been those who pay can pay, and those who don't. Okay. It's not a problem. We can make it work. Okay. I mean, we'll have 200 campers come through in the summer. I mean, the time you think about our high school kids all the way through, and we were a little down this year, not much, you know, but a little bit down from where we were 2 years ago before the pandemic, but. I mean, by the time it's all said and done, I had about 175, like, first through eighth graders come through, and then about 35 to 40 high schoolers. We were over 200 kids.
Oh, that's quite a few. Then.
Yeah, and, you know, not all the kids pay, but that's, you know, again, we're public education. Like, we're not trying to milk them out of mm-hmm. every dollar. We just want to make sure they're, you know, get a chance to play basketball.
And so the parents understand that it may not, you know, the kid can come for free. I mean, there's a, you know, sometimes parents are too embarrassed to say, hey,
you know, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll email the principals at various buildings, like, hey, if you got a student who wants to come to our camp, if you're concerned about any kind of price type thing. And a lot of times parents will just email too, like, hey, that's fine, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But the bigger issue, I think, a lot of times, though, is not necessarily financial. It's just, you know, watching little brothers and sisters and mm-hmm. getting rides and stuff like that. And that's the harder thing to solve.
Yeah.
The money piece is easy. Right? Yeah. That's just show up and we don't charge you. All right. But getting them there is the harder part.
So then in terms of the teams, do you think they notice the fans that are, or do they just kind of, they're more tuned into the game?
I don't know. As a coach, I don't. Like, I don't really notice anybody, but I don't play. Right. So, I think the kids feed off the energy, right? Do they notice any particular people there? I doubt it, but mm-hmm. I would guess that they are impacted by the sound of the gym, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The energy in the gym. You can feel that. As a coach, I almost never notice, you know, like I have to consciously make sure I look to see if my wife's there. Is that what, you know what I'm saying? Once the game's going, I'm not really like looking
around.
Sure, like,
yeah.
So I have to make sure. All right, they're here. Okay, yeah. I've seen them. All right, then I'm kind of. Then I don't worry about it after that.
Yeah.
So,
I was just curious about that because I think at that last game, a lot of the students were there, cheering everybody on and everything. I thought that was really. Because before that, like you said, it was just mostly parents.
It's parents and then, parents are great. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
They just don't cheer.
Yeah.
Now they cheer for their kid. They don't necessarily cheer. For the team, the same way that a high school kid does.
Mm-hmm. That was really impressive, the way those kids got together and hooped and hollered and all that kind of stuff.
And that'll be fun to see. You know, our loud crowd, as it's called, will be a lot of fun to get back together. We've always had a really good student section. So I'm excited to see what that looks like after your year away, to see how, you know, kind of how pent up that energy is to get back and do normal things at school.
So do they have pep rallies and things like that to kind of rev everybody up? Or is that like an old school kind of thing?
I don't think that we don't do pep rallies anymore. Like, we'll do a homecoming pep rally. We'll do a court warming pep rally in a year. But we don't do like the pep rally before every game.
Okay.
But they have, I mean, they'll have a whole student section that they call the loud crowd that shows up. In football, it's a really impressive group. In basketball, it's been pretty good. But football, I mean, you'll have 500 kids that are packed in there and going crazy. Basketball, we get about 100, but they're loud.
Yeah.
So
they're really good. Well, I want to thank you for your time today, Blake. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
You take care.